Hello, and thank you for listening to Sun Sounds. This is volunteer Mary Tolan, reading from the White Mountain Independent. The headline reads, "She's a Hero. Fast-acting 9-year-old girl prevents tragedy." When 9-year-old Brianna Bowman heard a neighbor calling for help while she bounced on her trampoline on Saturday morning around 10:15, November 2nd, she immediately knew something was wrong. Acting fast, she alerted her dad, Brian. Thanks to Brianna's quick thinking, a fire that could have ravaged their Sholo neighborhood near Fool Hollow Lake was stopped in its tracks. Earlier that day, a neighbor to the north of the Bowman family had spread what he thought were cold coals from his barbecue pit along his fence line before heading into town. But as winds picked up, the coals reignited, sparking a fire that spread quickly. Robert Griffith, another neighbor, noticed smoke coming from his yard while relaxing on his porch. At first, he thought someone was grilling, but he quickly realized his yard was on fire. Walking out barefoot, he grabbed the first tool available to deal with the problem, a plastic leaf rake. The wind whipped the flames, and Griffith was quickly trapped between his house and a boat filled with 50 gallons of gasoline that was inches from 3 pine trees already on fire. As the flames grew nearly 3 feet high, Griffith shouted for help. Brianna heard him and sprang into action, calling her dad. Brian grabbed a hose, jumped over Griffith's fence, and started fighting the fire. Desiree Hernandez, wife and mom, turned on the water while Brianna found a second hose and began spraying down the fence line to keep the flames from reaching their property. Quote, "Was spraying down the wood pile where the fire was spreading," Brian recalled. Then Robert mentioned the gas in the boat right next to the flames. "I realized it was a dangerous situation, but there wasn't much I could do with that knowledge except to keep fighting the fire." Griffith tried to help with the rake, but struggled to breathe through the smoke. He had already called 911, but couldn't stay on the line while battling the blaze. Brianna's calm and quick actions were crucial. "She's an amazing kid," Brian said. "We were giving her directions, but she was already doing exactly what was needed," unquote. Griffith praised her bravery, saying, "She jumped right in to help, then came over afterward to see if I needed anything. It's rare to see that kind of courage and kindness in kids today," unquote. By the time the Timber Mesa Fire Department and the Sholo Police Department arrived, the fire was under control, thanks to the teamwork of Brianna, her parents, and Griffith. When the neighbor who dumped the coals returned to see fire trucks around Griffith's house, he was devastated. Griffith warned him to always soak leftover coals. Quote, "Even 2-week-old coals can carry a spark, and with this wind, that's all it takes to start a fire," unquote. Griffith hopes Brianna's actions get the recognition they deserve. Quote, "She's a hero in my book," unquote, he said. Brianna, reflecting on the experience, said, "When I saw the smoke, I got kind of scared, but the best part was when I was putting out the fire along the fence." Desiree, Brianna's mom, described the moment vividly. Quote, "I was terrified seeing those flames coming over the fence. Then I saw my daughter out there, fearless, spraying down the fence without a second thought. I went to look for another hose, and she just stayed put, focusing on the flames," unquote. For Brian, the best part of that day was how his family pulled together. Quote, "When the fire department showed up and it was already handled, that felt good. They didn't see what we saw. It could have been so much worse," unquote. Even Brianna's 5-year-old brother, Isaiah, stood nearby in silence, wide-eyed as he watched his sister and dad battle the flames. The Bowman family, who moved to the neighborhood 8 years ago, have become close to their neighbors and run two local businesses. Desiree, a Round Valley High School graduate, has a cleaning service, Mountain Maid, while Brian runs a handyman company, Build with Passion. Brian, a Sholo High School graduate and City League basketball player, also helps coach the varsity basketball team at Blue Ridge High. For Brianna, school is her thing too. Her favorite subject is reading, and right now she's loving the one and only family. Desiree added, Brianna loves the outdoors. She picks up trash and goes with our neighbor to the community gardens every chance she gets. Brian added, I couldn't be more proud of my daughter. She's top-notch and always willing to help. She's the best role model, big sister and daughter anyone could ask for. She has a huge heart, and everyone who meets her loves her. The next headline reads, Apache County Planning and Zoning Commission balances growth, community concerns in latest meeting. By Jen Moriera, staff writer. On November 7th, the Apache County Planning and Zoning Commission met to address a variety of agenda items, with one request drawing particular attention. Dusty Fitzwater, a property owner in the Luna Lake Village subdivision in Alpine, had applied for a conditional use permit to establish a park model home, an RV pad for family visits, and, in the future, a single-family cabin on his one-acre property. The proposal sparked significant discussion among commission members and residents. During the public comment period, nearby residents expressed strong opposition, explaining that Luna Lake Village consists exclusively of single-family residences without any park model homes or multiple RV spaces. Residents emphasized the importance of maintaining the neighborhood's single-family residential identity and warned that allowing Fitzwater's plans might encourage other property owners to follow suit, affecting property values. Commission Chair Dan Muth clarified that the CUP would not rezone the property, but would provide an exception under current zoning rules. According to county ordinances, properties smaller than 5 acres are typically limited to a single permanent residence with one guest house unless a CUP is granted. Muth explained that Fitzwater's request for a cabin, a park model, and an RV pad on his one-acre lot required special approval as it exceeded the standard residential allowances. The commission engaged in extensive deliberation to find a compromise that would address both Fitzwater's plans and the community's concerns. Fitzwater stated that his intent was to use the RV pad and RV temporarily for family visits while the cabin was under construction, with no plans to convert the property into a commercial operation. After a thorough discussion, the commission voted to approve the permit with several conditions aimed at maintaining the neighborhood's character. The conditions included the following. Fitzwater may set up the RV on the property temporarily. The RV pad may only be used during construction of the cabin, and once the cabin is finished and a certificate of occupancy is issued, the RV pad must be abandoned or repurposed according to county regulations. The commission acknowledged that the enforcement of these conditions would largely rely on reports from the neighborhood, with residents encouraged to notify the county of any violations. In other business, the commission provided updates on the proposed Lava Run wind and solar project by Repsol. The Spanish energy company has been working to establish a large-scale renewable energy project in Apache County, focusing on wind and solar power generation. Since April of this year, community members have rallied against the Lava Run wind farm, voicing concerns over the potential effects on water, local landscapes, wildlife, and property values. Many residents worry that the project could disrupt the region's pristine environment, increase noise, and affect scenic views crucial to the area's identity and tourism. Repsol is planning to submit its conditional use permit application to Apache County by the first quarter of 2025. Public meetings about the project are scheduled for November 20th in St. John's and November 21st in Eager. The next headline reads, Arizona receives federal approval to cover indigenous healing services through Medicaid. By Sean Dean Silversmith of the Arizona Mirror, posted November 11th. Indigenous people have relied on traditional healing practices within their communities for generations and continue to do so along Western medicine with various tribal health care facilities across Arizona. Even though traditional healing services have not been covered under federal programs like Medicaid, many health care facilities in tribal communities continue to offer these services to indigenous patients. Because the services were being offered at some tribal health care facilities, a working group through the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, Arizona's Medicaid program, was established to figure out how traditional healing services could be reimbursed. Dr. John Molina, who is Pascua, Yaqui, and Yavapai Apache from the Arizona Advisory Council on Indian Healthcare, is part of the AHCCCS Traditional Healing Work Group. He said the group's work started more than 10 years ago and has been driven by the fact that there is still a, quote, significant presence of traditional healing services, unquote, that patients are utilizing within tribal communities. Quote, this is something that our people are still using, even though many folks believe that traditional healing services are probably a thing of the past, Molina said. It really isn't. After about a decade of work, Access received approval in October from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to cover traditional healing services provided through the Indian Health Service and tribally operated health facilities in Arizona. Indigenous traditional healing is a whole medical system encompassing a range of holistic treatments used by indigenous healers to treat many acute and chronic conditions or promote health and well-being, according to the National Institutes of Health / National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Quote, federal approval of coverage for traditional healing services in Arizona and multiple other states represents a watershed moment in recognizing the importance of culturally competent care, unquote, Access Director Carmen Heredia said in a statement. The administration first sought reimbursement for traditional healing through Medicaid in 2015 and again in 2020. According to the agency, CMS approval allows Access to establish a process and policies for reimbursing services provided by traditional healers employed by or contracted with an IHS or tribally operated health center. Urban Indian organizations may also offer services through a care coordination agreement with an approved IHS or tribally operated facility. According to the agency, traditional healing services can be provided only to Access members eligible to receive services through an IHS or tribally operated facility. Christine Holden, the tribal liaison for Access, said getting federal approval is the first step, and Access will move forward with plans to get state approval. Once Access receives the necessary approval from the Arizona legislature, A timeline will be established for implementation, and members and providers will be notified of the effective date. Traditional healing services take various forms, including sweat lodges, smudging, and ceremonies. Access stated that federal approval represents a critical first step toward allowing traditional healers to bill for services under Medicaid. Molina said this reassures that the IHS facilities and other tribally operated health facilities in Arizona can continue to offer these services and give those who have yet to provide them a chance to do so. Molina said, quote, "Traditional healing services are so part of our lifestyle and our culture because it brings a sense of wellness and healing that some Western medicines do not." Holden said integrating traditional healing practices into Medicaid is not just a policy change, but recognition. Quote, "It is recognition of the value that tribes, our cultures, and our traditions have, and what incorporating those practices into the Western system means for our people," Holden said. "It's a more inclusive healthcare system that is responsive to our cultural needs," unquote. Holden, who is White Mountain Apache and Hopi, said making traditional healing services more widely available is huge for indigenous communities in Arizona because tribes have been using those practices since time immemorial. Holden said that Access's ability to reimburse for traditional healing services is very much about respecting tribal sovereignty. Quote, "Tribes have the right to determine what healthcare looks like, and they are the best situated to determine what that healthcare looks like for their members," she said. "I'm hopeful that this will be a push in the right direction and setting new precedent across the United States so that all our relatives have the option to seek their traditional healing practices and incorporate that into their health care," she added. Thank you for listening to Sun Sounds. The next headline in the White Mountain Independent reads, "Whiting reelected, but Arizona AG now runs Apache County Attorney's Office," by Jen Moriera, staff writer. In an unusual series of events, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays has assumed control of the Apache County Attorney's Office just days before Michael Whiting's recent reelection amid legal challenges and his suspension from practicing law. The AG's takeover, effective November 1st, follows the Apache County Board of Supervisors' decision on October 31st to remove Whiting from office, citing his suspension and inability to perform his duties. Whiting was reelected by Apache County voters on November 5th with 60.66% of the vote. Mays formally notified the Board of Supervisors of her decision in a letter on October 31st, the same day the supervisors declared a vacancy in the county attorney's office and ceased Whiting's pay, with Whiting's Arizona State Bar license suspended as of November 1st. Mays cited her authority under Arizona revised statutes that allow the Attorney General to assume control of county attorney offices when public interests or the administration of justice are at risk. This arrangement effectively limits Whiting's ability to manage or influence the office, regardless of his reelection. Under this authority, the AG's office will provide all prosecutorial and legal services, ending the supervisor's ability to retain independent legal advisors without AG approval, and affecting two private attorneys previously hired by the board to assist with complex legal matters. The AG's office initially became involved with the Apache County Attorney's Office on June 4th, launching an investigation into allegations of misuse of public resources by Whiting. To maintain continuity during the investigation, Maves appointed Celeste Robertson as acting county attorney. Robertson, a longtime employee of the county attorney's office, served in this role until she and colleagues Garrett Kirchner and Cecilia Diaz left the office to form a nonprofit law firm, the Center for Rural Arizona Justice. In October, the Board of Supervisors approved a $600,000 contract with CRAJ to provide felony prosecution services for Apache County. This contract to the Center for Rural Arizona Justice was awarded without a competitive bidding process. At an October 1st meeting, Supervisor Alton Joe Shepard raised concerns about the ethics of the contract. Quote, "It just doesn't sit well with me," unquote, he said, questioning the appearance of a conflict of interest and the lack of transparency. Despite these objections, the contract passed with Tom Rankin from the AG's office supporting the arrangement on grounds that it would save the county money. The circumstances surrounding CRAJ's formation and the involvement of former county attorney's office employees have drawn criticism from community members and officials. To date, the AG's office has not directly addressed concerns about the CRAJ contract, deferring questions regarding the contract to the Board of Supervisors. Whiting's re-election leaves the supervisors and the AG's office facing a complex legal and ethical situation. Under Arizona law, his suspension from practicing law does not automatically prevent him from holding office. However, without an active law license, he is barred from performing the essential duties of a county attorney. The Board of Supervisors could declare a second vacancy due to Whiting's continued inability to serve, allowing them to appoint an interim county attorney to manage the office under the AG's supervision. This appointment could serve until a special election or the next general election, depending on the timing and resolution of Whiting's legal matters, with Mays indicating her office will work with the supervisors to identify a suitable candidate. The next headline reads, I-40 ramp closes east of Holbrook on November 14th through the 23rd. According to this story, the Arizona Department of Transportation advises drivers to prepare for ramp closures along Interstate 40 at Navajo Road, exit 325, and McCarroll Road, exit 330, over the next 2 weeks as work continues on the pavement life extension project on I-40 between Pinta and McCarroll Roads. Drivers should expect the following restrictions weekdays from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday, November 14th through Wednesday, November 20th. Eastbound I-40 on and off ramps will be intermittently closed. Drivers on eastbound I-40 can exit at McCarroll Road, exit 30, and then proceed westbound on I-40 to Navajo Road. Drivers on Navajo Road will need to use westbound I-40 to exit at Pinta Road, exit 320, and then proceed eastbound on I-40. Then, Friday, November 15th through Monday, November 18th, westbound I-40 on and off ramps will be intermittently closed. Drivers on westbound I-40 can exit at Pinta Road, exit 320, and then proceed eastbound to I-40 to Navajo Road. Drivers on Navajo Road will need to use eastbound I-40 to exit at McCarroll Road, exit 330, and then proceed westbound on I-40. Tuesday, November 19th through Friday, November 22nd. Westbound I-40 on and off ramps will be intermittently closed. Drivers on westbound I-40 can exit at Navajo Road, exit 325, and then proceed eastbound on I-40 to McCarroll Road. Drivers on McCarroll Road will need to use exit I-40 to exit at US 191, exit 333, and then proceed westbound on I-40. Ramps at adjacent interchanges will not be closed at the same time. Restrictions will be lifted each day after work hours. No work is anticipated to take place on the weekends. Drivers should use caution when approaching and driving through work zones. Thank you for listening to Sun Sounds, and we'll see you soon.